You're listening to the ELT Chat Podcast, Uncut. So I'm joined by Tony Gurr. We recently had an ELT chat on the subject of teacher observations, and we thought, Tony, that you'd be a great person to get on the podcast to follow up on some of those tweets. So thank you very much for joining us.
No, my pleasure. It was funny. I was actually on the high-speed train coming over from Eskişehir to Ankara, and I really wanted to join the chat, but my 3G let me down at 250 kilometers an hour.
So now you've got an opportunity to come back and give us your opinion. So you didn't miss out. So
No, I'm happy to do so.
Okay, so I thought I'd begin with a tweet from Louise Alex 668, who said, "I think it helps if those being observed know what the aims and the consequences are of the observation." How do you feel about that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, if people are not talking the same language, you know, you can have a whole range of misfires and misunderstandings, because at the end of the day, it's two people interacting on something that has a lot of potential to go wrong.
Mm, yeah. So when you say it could go wrong, how do you mean?
Well, we had on the blog. I mean, this I've been hooking up with a friend in Korea, Mike Griffith. And what we did is we did a series on misfires in observation. And, you know, when we actually looked at the ways that an observation can go wrong, a lot of those come down to, you know, poor or incomplete feedback, sometimes even biased feedback, mm-hmm. which can be, you know, really dodgy. The other big one is Luis was saying, is that idea of purpose, clarity, and transparency. That's across the whole process, not just on the feedback side of things. Mm-hmm. And they often come because of the experience of the observer, the talent that observer's been able to build up over time. But also you've also got the observee state of mind, you know, any fears they might have, any experiences that they have had that they also bring to the process as well. And then the other thing is that all that happens usually in an organizational culture, if that culture's not characterized by high trust or a positive climate, then that sort of adds another dimension to it as well. So, you know, you've got to be really careful, and it takes a lot to get it right.
Point, Jim Scrivener tweeted, "It's essential to mentally separate quality control observations on which jobs depend from developmental help, yet observers and teachers often mix them."
I totally agree with what Jim said. I also, you know, really link the whole observation process to quality issues in a school or institution. And if you think about it in terms of the development of quality thinking, I think there's been three eras or three phases. That first one is a focus on quality control. And what Jim was saying is absolutely right. I think in that approach to observation, there's much more of there's a horrible phrase, I hate it. I think it was coined by Tony Thornley, and he said, look, quality controlled observations are a bit like pig weighing. And essentially, most teachers will understand why I hate that phrase. But it's that idea of, you know, we've got a list of criteria, and we're going to weigh and measure you. And I think that the second phase is that moving towards what might be called quality assurance, which is much more about having a system of quality within the institution. The thing that we have there, though, is the focus is still very much on the institution, you know, being able to show that we have quality processes for our teachers. But the most recent phase is really the quality enhancement phase. And if I was, you know, being honest, I mean, that's the phase that I really like, because it's all about teacher learning, reflection, growth. But that is also a means to an end, if you will. I think all those phases are a means to an end. But it's that last one, quality enhancement, which is about student success as well. You know, we're working to improve and grow as teachers so that we can create as much success for student learning. So, yeah, I think those three things have to be looked at very carefully. And if you're going to develop an effective system of observation, you've really got to focus on that notion of fitness for purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a match between your ends and your means at the same time.
So one of the areas that, if we go into a more specific area of observations, PYS problems, better known as Phil Bird, he tweeted that people are too used to graded observations and it casts a shadow over developmental peer observations. How do you feel about that?
I agree. I mean, I've been involved in a lot of peer observation projects where we try and get peer observation going. And as we sort of suggested before, is people get used to a certain way of doing things. And, you know, a lot of the time, the solutions that we try and come up with are usually based on what we might call yesterday's solutions. Mm-hmm. So if you're introducing a peer observation program, but people have only been used to a quality control method, that's all they know. So you've actually got to work with people very, very carefully to get them used to, one, being observed themselves in a different kind of system, being an observer in a different kind of system, and then getting them to the other phase, which is then, you know, becoming a reflection facilitator, if you will. Mm-hmm. Now, all of those three areas are very different, because if you're working with a quality control mechanism, the control is really in the hands of the observer, in the hands of the institution. And people get trained in certain ways of thinking. So a lot of it is about breaking those and helping people move on to the next level.
Yeah, and following up from that, Shelley Terrell tweeted that she doesn't believe in grading teachers at all. She said it becomes more about the score than the actual specific feedback and the goals the teacher needs to improve on. Would you agree with that? Do you think there's a place for grading or not?
That's interesting, because I know a lot of CELTA trainers, if you will, who are involved in the process of that, as I was when I was younger. And, you know, there, people do an observation and somebody has to make a decision about whether it's a pass or fail. And I personally, again, don't like that approach to observation, but it's a reality. There's going to be certain times where people do have to be judged. Mm-hmm. But what you were saying earlier is really important, is that, you know, it can't be a game of the observee guessing what the observer is looking for. If there is an element of measurement or judgment, it has to be based on transparent criteria that everybody's involved with. More and more schools and institutions are looking at performance evaluations, and also there, observation can be a factor of that. And because decisions will be made about people's careers, it very much has to be based on a transparent model, and that model is communicated and understood by everybody involved. But that system is sort of underpinned with the concept of fairness. Mm-hmm. And as I said before, you know, with the misfires, one of the issues there is very often the quality of the observer themselves. So So it's a very complex issue to look at. But in a way, I won't say I don't believe in grading. I accept that it's a part of life, and my thinking would possibly be, if we have to have those systems, we make it as humane and as workable as possible.
Let's talk for a moment about peer observations. And moderator Bernie Wall, RLI Bernie, tweeted, is it good to have a culture of peer observations? And how do you foster this, if it is good, how do you foster this idea of what many people on ELT chat described as an open door policy?
I'm a great supporter of peer observation. Not just because it's peer observation, but because it opens that window to create more of a reflective culture in the institution, a culture that's based on, people don't like the phrase caring and sharing. You know, if you care enough to help somebody out, you know, they're also going to care enough about helping you out. And as we said before, it's about growing as a professional. So that culture is really important. The issue that comes up, though, is a lot of people who start a peer observation process are not experienced in the skills and abilities that are required to make the process work. A really good example, I put this on a blog post I did only this week, because I'm working with a couple of teachers at the moment, and I'm actually training them to be observers. And they've known each other for years, they've worked together for a very long time, they've got a really good learning partnership. And we've done all the basics. I mean, we've looked at, you know, what it means to be a good observer. We've done questioning techniques to encourage reflection. And these guys were great. This week, I pushed it to the next level with them and said, okay, I'm going to step back a little bit, and I'm just going to be the observer of the whole process. So the idea was that they would observe each other's classes, and then they would take the role of a feedback provider. And the first one that we did, it went south really quickly. Even though these guys had a really strong relationship, they've known each other, they care about each other deeply, the questions and the reactions that came up during that interaction phase actually created a tense environment. Now, for them, it was a great learning experience. And one of them actually said, Tony, I this is the first time I felt that I'm becoming a trainer, which was great. But the bottom line was, is they suddenly realized how difficult it is to be a good observer. And no matter how much you want to help, you know, we've got to be really careful about the quality of feedback that we give people and how we actually evolve the post-conference chat. And I think that's what I said. For me, that's a critical phase in the whole cycle, because if that goes wrong, then it puts the whole cycle in jeopardy.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And just following up on that, Tam Kirja tweeted that observing is great, but discussing with peers afterwards is another great part. So how would you advise teachers who perhaps want to incorporate some peer observation into their teaching? How can they go about getting the kind of feedback that is useful from them, from their peers?
Okay. No, I mean, that's, I think what I was hinting at is that it's a critical skill. I mean, a big problem with any observation cycle is that it's great to get feedback from people when it's positive. When it's less than positive, then we start to see those things touching people's nerves. And no matter how good the relationship is, none of us like to be criticized. The problem with the way a lot of institutions do it is the observer often takes the role of the expert. And the idea is that they see their role as being to weigh and measure the person that they're observing. Which, when things go great, there's no problem. But if there are some issues that maybe the observee needs to be made aware of, or they need some help in getting there, the questioning processes are really important. I mean, and the way the observer themselves asks questions to encourage that reflection becomes critical. So it's really not just an issue of giving feedback to people. It's using coaching strategies to help people become more aware of what actually happened in the classroom and how they were responding to those things at the same time. And that takes time. Nobody can be, you know, a great coach overnight. So people need a lot of support in those areas. And the example I gave you before is a perfect example of that. I've been working with these guys for weeks. And then when crunch time comes, something quite small, you know, the word why, for example, actually led to something that snowballed. Putting together that word why with something like, why didn't you do this? That very simple phrase can have a really big impact on somebody, and it can lead to all sorts of misfires.
So a couple of interesting tweets, just thinking about the process. Firstly, there was a tweet from Sue Lyne Jones, ESL Courses, who tweeted, ideally, observation should be a two-way process. And also Mike Harrison, who said, surely teachers should be able to give observers tasks, e.g., I'd like you to check my instructions. Do you agree with them?
Firstly, yes. I think what I mentioned before about those different types of quality processes that come in, the reason why I love the emphasis on quality enhancement is that it is about the conversation, it is about the discussion, it is about establishing ground rules, and it is about negotiating what's important. So it's not just a question of, you know, having criteria that you have a conversation about. Sometimes it's, you know, negotiating that criteria as well and allowing the observee, the teacher who's being observed, to take ownership of that process. I mean, at the end of the day, it's teachers themselves that know what's happening in their own classes. It's teachers themselves that know what their own strengths and areas of improvement are. So it's good to start from where the observation should end, and that's really the teacher themselves. So definitely the negotiation is a big part of it. But again, though, one thing that I found in the work that I do is very often people will come and they'll say to me, oh, well, you're the expert, Tony, so you tell me what you think. And the negotiation actually starts there, where I say, well, look, it doesn't really matter what I think. You know, my role is not here to weigh and judge you. My role is to help you be the best you that you can be. So you have to guide me to certain areas so that I can focus on those. And then when I give you feedback, I'll actually be encouraging you to focus on those areas you've told me to look at. Now, that sounds like a long, drawn-out process, but it's really about ownership. It's really about involvement, and also motivating the teacher to do what's best for them at the end of the day.
Great. Here's a really important question, I think. So I think that your advice would be really helpful here. So apologies if I get this name wrong, but it's Jagakonga, I think, who said, as an observee, should you be putting on your best lesson?
Really good question. Really good question. My short reply is no. I think people should, you know, teach the way that they teach. As I said before, you know, if you've got if you're involved in an observation process that is about enhancing the abilities of the teacher, or enhancing who that teacher can be, then we should actually be able to see, you know, what actually happened. Again, I did another observation last week, with somebody that I've done a lot of work with. And just before the session, she came and she said, "Oh, Tony, we just had a horrible discussion." And I said, "What happened?" She said, "Oh, they're getting really stressed out about the exams, and they're saying I'm not doing enough exam prep, and they want to do more exercises." And it sort of spun out of control, and we ended up having a disagreement. So she said, "I'm not going to be able to do my lesson plan, and I'll change things because you're coming." And I said, "Yeah, don't worry about it. If you've had a disagreement with those students and you think that's going to affect the lesson, roll with it. You do what you think is best. If something comes up, that also gives us an opportunity for me to help you see how you deal with a crisis." And then I actually physically saw her body change, because then she relaxed and thought she didn't have to put this show on for me, and I was there to help her with the problem solving at the same time. And she went in and she did a really good job, you know. And then at the end of it, she said, No, you're right. It's about me. It's about what I have to deal with." And both of us were very happy with that whole process.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's an excellent example, I think, of exactly what people need to be doing. Okay, let's have a quick word on a particular type of observation. TES Primary tweeted simply, "The dreaded video observation." Anyone?
Okay. I'll be honest there. I don't think video observations are dreaded at all. I mean, what I've actually found when I work with people, I don't usually introduce video immediately. What I try to do is get people just used to the whole process and reflecting, asking questions. And then usually what comes up in those discussions is the records that I keep. I mean, I try to keep very objective records. Again, another example from this week. I've been doing a lot of coaching recently on observation. I was working with another teacher, and before the session, we'd agreed that she wanted me to give her feedback on how she was interacting with students, because she's amazingly fluent. She's got a really high level of energy, and she was thinking that maybe she was talking too quickly. And actually, in the pre-conference, she had a dessert just before we went in, and I said to her, "Look, if you're worried about this, should you really be sort of like filling yourself up with sugar?" Now, we went into the session, and one of the records that I kept was how many questions she asked in the first 10 minutes. I don't think she'll mind me saying this, because we really laughed about it. It's in the first 10 minutes, she asked 26 questions,
Wow.
very rapid fire. And when I told her this, she was just so shocked. And at that point, then I sort of said to her, I said, "No, it would have been great if, for example, we'd recorded the whole session, you'd taken it home, actually had a look at it in the evening, and then we get back tomorrow morning, and maybe you can show me snippets of the video that reinforce the things that you want to focus on yourself." And immediately she said, "Oh yeah, that would be brilliant." And her response was, "Try to do it the next time you come." So that's what we'll do the next time. And that's really why I don't see any problem with video recording at all, because as we said before, if it's about quality enhancement, it's also about maximizing the ownership and control that teachers have. And video observation is one of the best ways I know of doing that.
So let's finish with a word for the observers. And so Marissa tweeted that the problem I have as an observer is that I'm worried if I am too subjective. So what advice can you give to any observers who are listening?
Oh, no, I think Marissa's hit the nail on the head there. I mean, in the literature related to field observation, there's always this discussion, if you will, on, you know, do we need to be really objective? You know, do we need to be more subjective? And I think, again, that really comes down to the negotiation between the teacher being observed and the observer themselves. I know I work with a lot of people who, for example, are on CELTA programs, or they're doing a CELTA program, and they come back very dissatisfied sometimes with the whole process, because they say, yeah, the observer didn't give me anything. The observer changed her personality for the observation session. Usually she's really chatty and friendly, and then she becomes a wall. Now, it's interesting there, because that impacts the quality of the discussion that you can have with people. So, but my view, my personal view, is that just as I ask the teacher to be as much of themselves as possible, I've got to be as much as myself as possible as well, because it's about authenticity at the end of the day. And my job is not to be there and pretend to be somebody else, because I also accept that I can never be wholly objective, because I've got biases, I've got interests that may clash with the other person. So I think it's best to be as open and honest as possible. I know I keep saying that, but for me, the best observations come out when the quality of the relationship is as strong as it can be. And you can't have a good relationship unless you're authentic, unless you're yourself, and unless you're prepared to accept that, sorry, the observer is going to screw up too. And, you know, at the end of the day, that creates the best kind of environment, because it's based on trust, it's based on honesty, and it's based on really wanting to help each other.
That's great. Thank you very much for joining us, Tony. It was very interesting to hear you talk about teacher observations. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. I've really enjoyed it, James. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.